There's a myth a lot of us grow up believing that hair loss is just a part of life. It happens. It runs in the family. And once it starts, there's no stopping it. But here's the truth. That's outdated thinking. Scientific understanding of hair loss has advanced in recent years. Today, we have a deeper knowledge of underlying causes, and we've developed science-backed solutions that are both effective and safe. And that's at the very root of Happy Head. Dermatologist-led innovation offering stronger, FDA-approved ingredients that work. But what really sets Happy Head apart is how personalized it is. They don't do one-size-fits-all fixes. You fill out a comprehensive consultation, and their board-certified dermatologists design a formula specifically for your hair loss pattern, goals, and lifestyle. And whether you're early in your journey or more advanced, Happy Head offers targeted options that actually work. Topical treatments, oral capsules, or potent dual-action bundles all delivered directly to you, discreetly and freshly compounded in the U.S. Most people start seeing results in 3 to 6 months. But the real magic? It's sustainable. This isn't just about growing hair, it's about keeping it long term. So no, hair loss isn't inevitable anymore. Visit happyhead.com and find out what's possible when science, expertise, and personalization come together. Hair happiness starts here.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Minisode 207. It's good to have you, as always. The face on that one was rough. Welcome to Minisode. I'm excited for today. I got a couple things that are just like, one's ongoing as we speak that I've been like trying to keep up with, and another one is like a scientific kind of thing from a few days ago.
Is one of them set very close to an airport tarmac?
Yes. Are you talking about the same thing?
No. I'm going to read my little excerpt from... I'm going to keep the N64 ball rolling. Don't worry.
You want me to knock this out? You want me to start then? Because
It's interesting shit.
Update for a lot of people. The past 2 to 3 weeks, I want to say in general, there have been noted and acknowledged incursions over U.S. Air Force bases, both in the U.S. and U.S. Air Force bases in the U.K., they have been asked about it in press briefings. The most recent one was like 4 days ago, where they basically say they're happening and they're not shooting them down because they're non-threatening.
They're not interfering with like base operations is what they're saying. Something like that.
So one happened last night, and it was being streamed, live tweeted about. People see like the orbs in the sky that are all over there. And a couple people, one being a pilot, I believe, who was out on the tarmac itself, had a stream
of a plane
in the cockpit streamed, and there are pictures that survived of this metallic fucking orb that he said came down like to the and hit the ground. I don't know if it was like shot down or taken out because there were military jets that went over there as well, and they had contact with whatever it was. However, his Twitter account has been removed. And everything he tweeted is gone, but people took screenshots of the thing. And it was live streamed as well. And the person that live streamed it is no longer available as well, but it was being live streamed last night. Simultaneously, I want to get the picture. We have a piece of video, actually 2 minutes of video right here. This is over RAF, Lake and Heath right now. This is 4 hours ago. It's happening again today. Pass this along there. That's a little Reddit post of just whatever's flying over
this
it.
Here it is.
So this this is the Manchester, UK sighting yesterday. A couple of screenshots of it and a couple of responses, but his account is now gone. This was the pilot. Can see his Twitter replies talking to somebody. They're like, thank you, Captain. Where was this? Like, but you said screenshots from his account of what he saw hit the ground.
Yeah. It's like a fucking ball, dude.
It's a metallic sphere. It's just a metallic sphere on the ground. Is it floating? I thought it looked like it was on the ground.
It looks like it's like,
I think the ground is wet. So yeah, it looks it's a reflection. And I think it's a reflection of it. I don't think it's actually floating. So this is happening now. We don't know the United States, literally the United States in press briefings are saying, yes, these are happening. no, we're not shooting them down because they're non-threats. They're not interfering with something or other. They basically gave an excuse. And much like last time, the question is like, well, what counts as a threat? These things have to be shooting at, like, if they're over our air force, if they're over our air bases, surveilling the air bases, even if they're from another country, like, wouldn't that be a threat? But that's, you know, I'm talking externally as not a member of the government, obviously. So this is just happening. There's no, I'm not jumping to any conclusions. I'm not saying it is what it is and what it isn't. All I'm saying is this is happening now and has been happening, like I said, really a lot the past 3 weeks. It's been like almost every night or every few nights that these things show up. And I think the one prior, which might have been a few nights ago, they were saying that they didn't come over the airbase. They stayed just outside the airbase by a few miles, but still within visible range.
Like, what is that?
There are other videos of people catching them in the air, too. They're just like orange balls in the sky. No idea. The military says drones. So, like, you know, don't no idea. But if whose drones, what are they? People are in the comment section. Something I didn't know is if you're just flying just hobby drones, built into their programming, at least most of the newer ones, are the limitations of where you can't fly. And if you try to fly in a restricted space, the drone will like be programmed to stop and you'll get an error and you won't be able to go any further. So, you know, that's something to keep in mind. But even if it's a hobby drone, they've been going on for 3 weeks and the army doesn't.
It's extremely creepy how stuff is getting taken down.
Yes, it's being taken down. I don't understand.
This pilot's account came down. There was a YouTuber live streaming. You saw that?
Gone. Yep.
Gone. The post. Okay. The live stream went down and then the post was taken off of UFOs by the mods.
Yes. It doesn't matter. No one knows. And there's not any reason really being given. It's just happening. And it's weird because it's like, your gut reaction is like hoax, right? Like this has to be hoax, but it's been going on for weeks. This is fact. Like it is what it is. What is it is obviously the question. If it's drones from another country or if it's drones in general, like who fucking knows? But like, yeah, I don't fucking know. It's fucking weird and it's worth following. And like I said, 3 hours ago as the time of this recording on 11/27/2024, there's another one happening over Lake something or other. What was it? What was the one I posted it to you? RAF Lakenheath, wherever that is.
Drones. Also, I want to say, I was talking about the mods of our UFOs. They did take down the post, but only because they made it into a big post.
They made a mega thread. Okay, cool.
There's a mega thread and it's also got reports of the nukes being stationed there. It has old Lakenheath UFO stuff. It has a lot of stuff. It's a really great little post already. It just came up an hour ago.
That was actually, go ahead. Sorry.
It appears that the Captain Bigelow Twitter profile was deleted by the user.
Yeah,
right.
All the stuff on it.
Like, so we know people said like cops could have shown up and just been like, hey, even if it was like footage of another country's drones, it wouldn't surprise me if like the law enforcement came up and was like, hey, can you like not do that? No, but I mean like
the account, the full account was deleted by the, yes, by the correct user.
Yes.
I don't know. Just that's a weird thing to happen. Yes, not, there's know, no implication yeah. there. It's just a weird thing. Like if it was a ban or if it was something else, but this is like evidence suggests that it was the user did it. Mm-hmm. So this person put the stuff out and then was like, bye.
Yeah. If he was like the only source, then it'd be like, yeah, who knows? But like we have other sources as well. It's just weird. Sure.
I mean,
it's
I'm looking weird. At this video. Do you guys have this one? Sorry. I've been distracted by this clip right here.
There's a lot of clips out there right now from a lot of different people.
This one has video of like daytime from the cockpit looking up.
Yeah.
So dude, like, this is and there's crazy just like a little stuff. Orby there. It's interesting. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I have no idea what any of that means, but
it's like, so much exactly the thing that we always talk about that kind of moves the scale for me.
Oh, personally. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, there
to
it
me,
is.
This feels very real.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It feels like all these other pilots.
We see pilots get videos of orbs in the sky all the time. We get those kinds of videos.
Yeah, it's just strange. I keep trying to figure out like exactly what's going on here. But admittedly, it's weird. So the main image that's this orb on the ground, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Underneath it. I'm assuming this is compression from just putting it online.
And it's like, rainy, so
like a square underneath that. Like if you look at the orb, there's like a there's like something underneath it that is, I think it's just the artifacting, but it also looks like some sort of weird, like, I don't know. It doesn't seem
to me that looks like it's because the ground is wet and slick. So we're seeing like a reflection at the angle that we're at. And
sure. Like it's definitely
because the video is raining. You can see the rain in the video.
Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out, like, there's a lot of weird things in this that I'm, you know, I'm doing my skeptic thing, trying to figure out. But like, there's also a lot of unanswered shit in here. So I have no clue.
I'm with you. Like, I don't want to jump to any conclusions other than like, it's been going on, and there's obviously in the theory world, every theory you can imagine is running wild right now. One of the bigger ones is like, if nukes are being moved, like usually UAP activity seems to kick up when nuclear things are being moved around or nukes are being kind of put somewhere. I don't know if there's any truth to that because I don't know what air bases have nukes and don't and whatnot. It's just interesting just in the, because of the times we're in right now. But whatever it is weird. It's fucking weird. And I don't know. It's just, it's happening.
It's a pretty, like, this could be a historic minisode, folks.
Yeah, it could be, or it could it end could up being one that just gets swept away in the deluge of insanity.
This moves the needle a little bit for me. This is pretty close to what I was imagining when I was talking about, you know, UFO landing in the middle of the Hollywood Bowl and a bunch of people filming it.
Yeah. Did you see the one from a couple weeks ago where a trucker, his side of his truck got fucking railed like by a giant sphere. And he showed, like, he took a picture of it, of the thing, of the dent in it. And there's CCTV security footage from the parking lot he was in, because it's all where truckers park for overnight. And you see this thing come in, boom, hit it, and then take off. It looks like it almost bounces away, but they couldn't find it. And it's just like this, it is another weird thing. But that wasn't the main thing I wanted to talk about today. The scientific fucking cool ass breakthrough that happened mere days ago for the very first time through fascinating techniques.
This is also crazy.
There has been the world's first image photograph of a photon.
Yeah.
Jesse, did you see this?
Fucking Pokemon. No. It looks crazy.
Dude, no. So it looks like, I'm just going to say it just looks like an eyeball. Look at it, and I'm going to send you a link right now to one of the articles.
I'd love to see this.
So I'll continue. I'll read the article here while you open it. The first direct visualization of the shape of a photon has been created. These particles of light are impossible to photograph, but physicists at the University of Birmingham have now calculated their wave function to produce an accurate image of a photon as it's emitted. Photons are what allow us to see. It's light. Photons are light. With our eyes, with our camera. When they reach our retinas or camera sensors, they carry with them information about the source that emitted them or objects they've bounced off of along the way, allowing our brains or cameras to construct an image. However, one thing photons can never capture images of is other photons. That's because they don't interact with each other in any way. But now Birmingham physicists have created the next best thing, a mathematically accurate visualization of the shape of a photon. Quote, the visualization is an exact simulation of a photon as it is emitted by an atom sitting on the surface of a nanoparticle, co-author Ben Ewan told New Atlas. Quote, the shape of the photon is deeply affected by the nanoparticle, making it thousands of times more likely that the photon is emitted and even allowing it to be reabsorbed by the atom multiple times. The shape of a photon is a tricky thing to pin down, and it doesn't quite mean the same thing as illustrating the shape of a regular object. Instead, it's an intensity distribution, basically a map of where you could expect to find the photon at a certain point in time. Brighter areas indicate a higher chance of the photon appearing there when its location is measured. Quote, the visualization is exactly that distribution of a photon a short time after it's been emitted, Ewan told us. Quote, Because it's a quantum particle, you cannot measure it in one go as the measurement destroys it. However, if you were to repeat the measurement of where a photon was detected many times, you would see exactly this distribution. Furthermore, and one of the strangest things about quantum mechanics is that before the photon is ever detected, all the detail information of this intensity distribution already exists through what we call wave function, which is exactly what we were able to calculate for the first time, Ewan continues. So he keeps going. Like, I can.
What the fuck
I
does
read.
That even mean? Like, what does that literally mean?
Well, because a light photon is both a wave and a particle simultaneously. So right. they're able to take the wave function and translate that.
Before it's where it is?
Because it basically has infinite possibilities of where it can be. So right. they have to calculate all those possibilities the moment it leaves the nanoparticle, aka the moment it is emitted where it will be moving toward us, because I imagine it changes as it moves. Right. The picture of it is fascinating because it just, if you turn it to horizontal, it looks like an eyeball to me.
Or
I don't know about you.
A lemon.
It does.
A lemon. Yes. It looks like a lemon in its current orientation, but even then it looks like it has irises and like shit on the inside. Not that it does, but it just, it has
looks,
a similar
it does
look,
look
to
exactly
it.
Exactly like the thing that we use to like ingest them.
Yeah.
If that's
I
want to
read this last
it.
Quote and that's the end of the article. He goes, we used a branch of mathematics called complex analysis to transform the problem from a continuous set based on the real numbers into a discrete set based on some distinct complex numbers, said Ewan. Quote, whilst it might seem complex, this simplified the problem massively, allowing us to exactly represent it as an interaction with just a few hundred, quote, complex light modes. Quite amazingly, when we did this, a number of details just started to drop out of our theory, such as exactly how light propagates and exactly what the shape of the photon's intensity distribution is expected to be like. And that's the end of the article.
Hmm. Vibes.
So there you go. We Vibes. Can see photons.
Absolutely so trippy. Like the trippiest, like just thinking about it and that's happening right now and all the time. And
what?
Billions and billions and billions of times every moment is just crazy.
So what's interesting is this led me to a mini rabbit hole where another professor has had this theory that if we do live in a projected holographic reality, and not in the way of that we would understand technology, but in like the dimensional through time, etc., that like quantum mechanics, we talked about this on the show before, maybe is like video game, right? Where you turn and things only kind of load when they are measured.
Right.
In a simple form when you look at something, but things are being measured even when you're not there. Like you just things interacting with things. But the problem is, and he says the difficult point in testing this is that anytime you measure a quantum state or quantum particle, it snaps into a measurement. And if you're not measuring it and it is, you know, nothing or everything at the same time until you look at it, like a video game would keep data that's not being perceived.
Right.
Like how do you measure that without perceiving it? And so he recently came up with a way, like a proposed way to do it via mirrors and like laser detection and science I don't understand.
Right. Like calculating the map, which we already have
how to
of
extract
a video game environment.
Literally yeah. how to extract the data of an area that is not mm-hmm. being actively measured by anything at the time, which I don't comprehend because I'm not smart.
It doesn't make that's what I'm saying. That's the part where it loses me is that jump in the logic right there is the same one that I was having trouble with a second ago, where I'm just like, what is it?
How the thing with the photon is all possible like intensities in a particular area, and so yeah, that's what it looks like, and I think I understand to on some level, but I don't know. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And they said that this is going to be huge in studying quantum mechanics moving forward for people to have like a visualization of what a photon looks
absolutely
like.
Absolutely wild style.
Yeah. Wild style. I just thought it blew my mind seeing it, and I couldn't help but be like, man, it looks cool. And it's also like, what the fuck does this even mean?
How that distracted me from fucking aliens arriving right now.
To
that
me,
must
that's
be a
like,
very trippy concept. It's a
to
trippy
me,
concept.
That,
quantum
that
mechanics.
Shit makes aliens more likely. You know, yeah. Quantum mechanics in a way that we have a hard time understanding because of our restrictions of living in a 3D reality or space makes it more likely to me that these things are something that our brains just can't fucking grapple. Like, how do you grapple? We're looking at a photon of infinite possibilities presented in an image that is definitely finite, but I don't understand. Yeah, I don't know. And they're smarter people than us. We'll reply on Reddit somewhere, and we appreciate you greatly. That's it. That's all I brought today. Aliens in a weird way, tangentially, and photons. Whoever wants to take it next, feel free. Take the initiative.
I got story time, so why don't you go, Jesse?
Cool. There is a gravity hole in the Indian Ocean.
Great.
And
whoa.
Maybe this all ties together, bro. Maybe this is all one thing.
So a circular region of the Indian Ocean has this weird thing in it where the ocean region with its gravitational pull is so weak that it's 308, the sea levels there are 348 feet lower than anywhere else on Earth. Apparently, this was discovered back in 1948, and it was just sort of this weird gravity anomaly. And as of 2023, we have more information about this, where supercomputers, 19 supercomputers, were used to simulate the motion of the Earth's mantle and tectonic plates over the last 140 million years and teased out a scenario why this could be. And apparently, according to this, the Indian Ocean formed this gravity hole after the death of an ancient ocean called Tethys, which existed between supercontinents Laurasia and Gondwana. Oof.
You tried, man. We appreciate the effort.
Thanks. 180 million years ago. And I guess what happened is the ocean sort of like a chunk of Tethys that the ocean was on sank beneath the Eurasian plate 180 million years ago. Ooh, and sank into the crust of the Earth.
Oh, and so it's just interesting. Just
around 20 million years ago, as these fragments landed in the lower region of the mantle, they displaced high-density material originating from the African blob, as they terminology has it here, a compact bubble of crystallized magma 100 times taller than Mount Everest that's trapped beneath Africa. And plumes of low-density magma rose to replace the dense material, diminishing the overall mass in that very specific area. Here's the thing, though. Scientists have yet to confirm any of this. It's just models. But I think it's hyper-fascinating. There's a place on Earth where the gravity is different than the rest of Earth.
It's really just...
And it's just that one spot in the Indian Ocean.
It's really just That's fascinating. Cool. It's really just some Doctor Who shit, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't make fucking sense.
What's crazy is that there's also the article, I think, hilariously ends on like even more mystery, which is it's not just Earth, but Mars, too, has blobs of all shapes and sizes lurking beneath the surface.
That's cool. Like,
cool,
fuck,
cool,
man.
Cool.
Me, too. Cool. Inside my clothes.
Yeah, me,
there's
too.
Blobs
exactly.
of all shapes and sizes in there.
Yep.
If you come in my shower while I'm in there, that's exactly what you're going to find.
Lurking beneath the surface. Yeah.
Just behind the curtain. Just behind the veil. A thin plastic veil with some monsteras on it.
Reality is not what we think it is, boys. That's all. That's all I've come to. Like, that's what this podcast has done to me. It's just some like.
Admittedly, what it makes me understand completely and totally is why large portions of the global population choose to ignore it and rely on like very simplified versions of life.
People dancing and pointing at words instead.
Yeah, because it is like existentially terrifying to think how little we know. But I think that's the you know, the catch 22, the curse of knowledge is that the more you know, you realize you don't know.
The more you don't
thing.
Know.
Before
and
you
that's
even
scary.
Think about, yeah, before you even think about like the geopolitical climate, before you even think about like the environmental like situation on this planet that's just dire as hell. Before you even think about anybody dying, just the fact that fucking photons look like a fucking eyeball and then there's like a gravity well in the ocean that doesn't
or
make fucking sense. Or a lemon that can see you and track the movements of the one ring. You know, any of those things. The fact that like even just before we don't go anywhere else, that is already too much for me is crazy to be. It's crazy to be alive. It's crazy to be conscious.
If
we have something to do with it existing, it at least I'm that important. Just be like humans. At least if we observing existence have something to do with it existing, at least we matter.
I mean, on the very core level, we're just the universe experiencing self in a physical way. We're space dust. Wandering space dust in space. We're just, that's all we are. But it is cool to be like, I don't know. For me, it makes me crave to know more. Like, I want to dig deeper. Like, not knowing that reality seems to just be not very stable and just unknowable makes me want to know more. I just want to like chase that high. That
yeah, I think that's the key to all of this, especially this show. But like in general, the idea that really, if you're like, What's the human condition? What should it? I would say it is the search to know more, to continue to learn, to adapt and change and grow as a person and as a species. And it drives me crazy when people like reject that. And they're like, this is what I know and I'm sticking to it and I refuse to change. And I'm like, you are literally against what being a human is. Like, we adapted from dudes in caves to using tools to being the smartest damn thing on the planet because people were like, what's over there? What is that? How's that work? Let's figure this out.
Let's help each other and figure it out. Like,
we're literally just the smartest version of an ape.
And we are.
And here we are. Like, we've done some amazing things.
You know, when you're young too, especially even in your 20s, you know, 100 years ago feels so far away. But as you get older, you're like, wait, that wasn't long at all. And 100 years ago, you're looking at, all they had was like black and white TV and like not much else. And now only 100 years later, we're talking about crazy AI. We're talking about quantum computing. We have literal VR that we can slap on our heads and use all only 100 years from having just black and white TV and radio dramas as entertainment.
You know, people talk about Prometheus and
that's
like
impossible. That, to me, that's almost impossible to wrap your head around. It's like in 100 years, we're literally talking about AI and we have VR and that's scary. How, and now we don't know what we have no idea what AI is going to do to our world, like bad or good.
I will say most AI probably going to be terrifying, but we're going to get it no matter what. It's happening. Like, yes, AI it's is done. Coming. But the
you can't
thing,
put the toothpaste back in the tube.
I will say now, if you want to have a great time, I'm just going to put this out there. This is a shameless plug. There's a game for Meta Quest called Wall Town. Boy, I wish I got that correct. Or like Wall Town of Wonders. I'm looking this up. But basically, it's called Wall Town Wonders. Imagine a VR AR game where the walls of your home become a town when you put the headset on, and there are little people that make houses in your walls. I love that. Like, that's what
that's
I'm here
wild.
For. That is, and so like they fly around your house when you put the thing on, and they like build towns and
you
railroads
dust off
through
my
your
Quest
home.
Too that I haven't touched in like 3 years.
That's what's
love
that that's stuff. What's amazing about video games in general is that they're like kind of like reality, right? But we can control it. Mm-hmm. So it's like what we're doing every moment that we're existing, but also like we know what's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
So but it's wild that we can think about that we might be in a game, you know, like in a way that like.
Or in a way that it doesn't matter what a game is versus what isn't a game. Yeah.
And I mean, like, it doesn't truly, because we are in a simulation. Like, if we are in a simulation or whatever it is, this projected reality doesn't fucking change that I have to live my day like a human being. And I mean, have to eat.
That's honestly
to,
what it comes down to in the end is like, could, if this was all an illusion and a game and we were just NPCs in a story for someone else, could you even change that reality? Like, and if you can't, then you just have to accept your role in it and like go on being yourself. Like, there's what would you do?
Because like logically you figure it out, and yeah, like logically you know, but you still can't. You still don't know what's going to happen. It's just as much as a surprise for you. As
you want to know something about the Matrix that was pointed out to me only recently that I never noticed before. So if you remember, like when Cypher like sells them out and everything, and then they get attacked. Right.
Yep.
They're kind of like climbing up this like chimney.
Yeah.
Right. And
between the walls.
Yeah. And as a reminder, the whole thing about the Matrix is that you have the reason you're free is because you've realized that nothing is real. Right.
Yeah.
Do you know what gets them all killed and why Cypher? You know, like, do you know what gets them all killed? Cypher gets dust in his lungs and coughs. Right. Because
I forgot about that.
Because Cypher. No, like we know
that's right.
He would
knows.
Rather it be real, right? And so he doesn't he sells them out by thinking it's real. I thought that was clever and a poignant sort of button.
Matrix is
story.
A fucking masterpiece movie. I loved it.
It's a really good screenplay. Like also like just
wasn't the original idea wasn't they weren't using us for batteries? They were using our brains as CPUs, and but that was too like
it was just too
intellectual
heady.
For the general audience.
Yeah. But that's like more accurate to like probably what we're thinking. And honestly, man, I'm sad that like fandoms need like to be placated these days because that Resurrection movie is so fucking tight. Until the very end, I didn't really understand the love story aspect of it. I get it, but it didn't really like work for me. But the notion of that movie and what it says about the Matrix and what it's trying to say about the Matrix is really some good science fiction. It's really, it's neat. So
there is good stuff about the sequel movies, even if most of it's stupid as hell.
Well, this is the even more sequel movie.
I haven't seen that yet. Yeah. I haven't seen the fourth one yet. Fucking, that's right.
It's fucking...
The meta shit I'm into, but it's worth
it's worth watching. It feels like a French comic book. It's pretty good.
All right, Alex, how about you lighten us up a little bit here?
This is not that light, but I will tell you this. If you were around in 2010 when this came out and you were like on the internet and like probably if you're a listener of the Chilluminati who was like of age to think for yourself in 2010, you probably, and you're a gamer, especially, you probably heard about this.
This is one of my favorites.
One of the original video game urban legends. It's called Ben Drowned. And it became, actually, I think the whole thing is called The Haunted Cartridge is actually the name of the, like, of the official story arc. Because like I said, in the episode, this eventually transitioned to being like a product that people could consume and get excited for and like was mask off a creation. Right. But at the time it was just developing and coming out. And the fun thing about creepypasta and a, you know, a thing that I think is very in line with Chilluminati is that you just got to buy into it for the moment, for the episode.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool. So I'm going to read the original post. There's a lot of different versions of this post, but I'm going to actually, for historical purposes, go back and read the actual /X version of this post that was posted on September 7th, 2010. How's that sound?
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Great. Ben Drowned.
Sounds great.
Okay, X, I need your help with this. This is not copy pasta. This is a long read, but I feel like my safety or well-being could very well depend on this. This is video game related, specifically Majora's Mask, and this is the creepiest shit that has ever happened to me in my entire life. Having said that, I recently moved into my dorm room starting as a sophomore in college, and a friend of mine gave me his old Nintendo 64 to play. I was stoked to say the least. I could finally play all of those games in my youth that I hadn't touched in at least a decade. And let me just say, Majora's Mask is already 10 years old at this point, just so we're all...
Wow.
All right. It's a retro time. Game already in 2010. His Nintendo 64 came with one yellow controller and a rather shoddy copy of Super Smash Brothers. And while beggars can't be choosers, needless to say, it didn't take long until I became bored of beating level 9 CPUs. Very inside baseball.
Sure.
That weekend, I decided to drive around a few neighborhoods about 20 minutes or so off campus, hitting up the local garage sales, hoping to score on some good deals from ignorant parents. I ended up picking up a copy of Pokemon Stadium, GoldenEye, fuck yeah, F-Zero, and two other controllers for $2. It was really a different economy back then. Satisfied, I began to drive out of the neighborhood when one last house caught my attention. I still have no idea why it did. There were no cars and there were only one table was set up with random junk on it, but something sort of drew me there. I usually trust my gut on these things, so I got out of the car and I was greeted by an old man. His outward appearance was, for lack of a better word, displeasing. It was odd if you asked me to tell you why I thought he was displeasing. I couldn't really pinpoint anything. There was just something about him that put me on edge. I can't explain it. All I can tell you is that if it wasn't in the middle of the afternoon and there were other people within shouting distance, I would not have even thought of approaching this man. He flashed a crooked smile at me and asked me what I was looking for, and immediately I noticed that he must be blind in one of his eyes. His right eye had that glazed over look about it. I forced myself to look to his left eye instead, trying not to offend, and asked him if he had any old video games. I was already wondering how I could politely excuse myself from the situation when he would tell me he had no idea what a video game was. But to my surprise, he said he had a few ones in an old box. He assured me he'd be back in a jiffy and turned to head back into the garage. As I watched him hobble away, I couldn't help but notice that he was selling on his table. Littered across the table were rather peculiar paintings, various artworks that looked like ink blots that a psychiatrist might show you. Curious, I looked through them. It was obvious why no one was visiting this guy's garage sale. These weren't exactly aesthetically pleasing. As I came to the last one, for some reason, it almost looked like Majora's Mask. The same heart-shaped body with little spikes protruding outward. Initially, I just thought that since I was secretly hoping to find that game at these garage sales, some Freudian bullshit was projecting itself onto the ink blots. But given the events that happened afterwards, I'm not so sure now. I should have asked the man about it. I wish I would have asked the man about it. After staring at the Majora-shaped blot, I looked up and the old man was suddenly there again, arm's length in front of me, smiling at me. I'll admit I jumped out of reflex and I laughed nervously as he handed me a Nintendo 64 cartridge. It was the standard gray color, except that someone had written Majora on it in black permanent marker. I got butterflies in my stomach as I realized what a coincidence this was and asked him how much he wanted for it. The old man smiled at me and told me that I could have it for free, that it used to belong to a kid who was about my age that didn't live here anymore. There was something weird about the man, how the man phrased that, but I didn't really pay any attention to then. I was too caught up in not only finding this game, but getting it for free. I reminded myself to be a bit skeptical since this looked like a pretty shady cartridge and there's no guarantee it would work. But then the optimist inside me interjected that maybe it was just some kind of beta version or pirated version of the game, and that was all I needed to be back on Cloud Nine. I thanked the man, and the man smiled at me and wished me well, saying, "Goodbye, then." At least that's what it sounded like to me. All the way in the car ride home, I had a nagging doubt that the man had said something else. My fears were confirmed when I booted up the game. To my surprise, it worked just fine. And there was one save file simply called Ben. "Goodbye, Ben," he was saying. "Goodbye, Ben." I felt bad for the man, obviously a grandparent and obviously going senile. And I, for some reason or another, reminded him of his grandson, Ben. Out of curiosity, I looked at the save file. Eyeballing it, I could tell he was pretty far in the game. He had almost all of the masks and 3/4 remains of the bosses. I noticed that he used an owl statue to save his game. He was on day 3 and by the Stone Tower Temple with hardly an hour left before the moon would crash. I remember thinking that it was a shame that he had come so close to beating the game, but he never finished it. I made a new file named Link out of tradition and started the game, ready to relive my childhood. For such a shady-looking game cartridge, I was impressed at how smoothly it ran, literally just like a retail copy of the game, save for a few minor hiccups here and there, like textures being where they shouldn't be, random flashes of cutscenes at odd intervals, but nothing too bad. Which, if you know how games work, is just not how it would happen. However, the only thing that was a little unnerving was at times the NPCs would call me Link, and at other times they would call me Ben. I figured it was just a bug, a fluke in the programming causing our files to get mixed up or something. It did kind of creep me out though after a while, and it was around after I had beaten the Woodfall Temple that I regrettably went into the save files and deleted Ben. I had intended to preserve the file just out of respect to the game's original owner, and it's not like I needed two files anyway. So hoping that that would solve the problem, and it did, and it didn't. Now, NPCs wouldn't call me anything, or my name should be in the dialogue. There was just a blank space. My save file name was still called Link, though. Frustrated and with homework to do, I put the game down for a day. I started playing the game again last night, getting the Lens of Truth and working my way towards completing the Snowhead Temple. Now, some of you more hardcore Majora's Mask players know about the fourth day glitch. For those of you who don't, you can Google it, but the gist of it is that right as the clock is about to hit zero on the final day, you talk to the astronomer and look through the telescope. If you time it right, the countdown disappears and you essentially have another day to finish what you were doing. Deciding to do the glitch and try and finish the Snowhead Temple, I happened to get it right on the first try and the time counter at the bottom disappeared. However, when I press B to exit the telescope, instead of being greeted by the astronomer, I found myself in the Majora boss fight room at the end of the game, the trippy boxed-in arena, staring at Skull Kid hovering above me. There was no sound, just him floating in the air above me and the background music, which is regular for the area, but still creepy. Immediately, my palms began to sweat. This was definitely not normal. Skull Kid never appeared here. I tried moving around the area, and no matter where I went, Skull Kid would always be facing me, looking at me, not saying anything. Nothing would happen, though, and this kept up for around 60 seconds. I thought the game had bugged or something, but I was beginning to doubt that very much. I was about to reach for the reset button when text appeared on my screen. "You're not sure why, but you apparently had a reservation." I instantly recognized that text. You get that message when you get the room key from Anju at the Stockpot Inn. But why was it playing here? I refused to entertain the notion that it was almost as if the game was trying to communicate with me. I started navigating the room again, testing to see if that was some sort of trigger that enabled me to interact with something here. Then I realized how stupid I was. To even think that someone could reprogram the game like this was absurd. Sure enough, 15 seconds later, another message appeared on the screen, and again, like the first one, it was already a pre-existing phrase. "Go to the lair of the temple's boss? Yes or no?" I paused for a second, contemplating what I should press and how the game would react, when I realized that I couldn't select no. Taking a deep breath, I press yes, and the screen faded to white with the words "Dawn of a New Day," with the subtext "I beneath it. Where I was ported to filled me with the most intense sense of dread and impending fear that I have ever experienced. The only way I can describe the way I felt here is having this feeling of inexplicable depression on a profound scale. I am normally not a depressed person, but the way I felt here was a feeling that I didn't even knew existed. It was such a twisted, powerful presence that seemed to wash over me. I appeared in some kind of weird Twilight Zone version of Clock Town. I walk out of the clock tower, as you normally do when you start from day one, only to find that all of the inhabitants were gone. Usually with the fourth day glitch, you can still find the guards and the dog that runs around outside the tower. This time, they were all gone. What replaced them was the ominous feeling that there was something out there in the same area as me and that it was watching me. I had four hearts to my name and the hero's bow, but at this point, I wasn't even considered for my avatar. I felt that personally, I was in some kind of danger. Perhaps the most chilling thing was the music. It was the Song of Healing, ripped straight from the game itself, but played in reverse. The music would get louder, building up so as if you should expect something to pop out at you, but nothing ever did. And the constant loop began to wear on my mental state. Every now and then, I would hear the faint laugh of the happy mask salesman in the background, just quiet enough so that I wasn't sure if I was hearing things, but just loud enough to keep me determined to find him. I looked in all four zones of Clock Town, only to find nothing. No one. Textures were missing. West Clock Town had me walking on air. The entire area felt broken, hopelessly broken. As the reverse Song of Healing repeated for what must have been the 50th time, I just remember standing in the middle of the South Clock Town, realizing that I had never felt so alone in a video game before. As I walked through the ghost town, I don't know whether it was the combination of the out-of-place textures and the atmosphere and the haunting melody of the once peaceful and soothing song being butchered and distorted, but I was literally on the verge of tears, and I had no idea why. I hardly ever cry, something that has gripped me here in this powerful sense of depression that was both foreign and crippling. I tried leaving Clock Town, but every time I attempted to zone out, the screen would fade to black and I would just zone into another part of Clock Town. I tried playing my ocarina. I wanted to escape and I did not want to be here. But every time I played the Song of Time or Song of Soaring, it would only say, "Your notes echo far, but nothing happens." By this point, it was obvious the game didn't want me to leave, but I had no idea why it was keeping me here. I didn't want to go inside the buildings. I felt that I would be too vulnerable there to whatever I was terrified of. I don't know why, but I came up with the idea that maybe if I drowned myself at the laundry pool, I could spawn somewhere else and leave this place. As I zoned in and ran towards the pool, that's when it happened. Link grabbed his head, and the screen flashed for a brief moment of the happy mask salesman smiling at me, not Link, me, with Skull Kid's scream playing in the background. And when the screen returned, I was staring at the Link statue from playing the song Elegy of Emptiness. I screamed as the thing just stared back at me with that haunting facial expression. I turned around and ran out and back into the South Clock Town, and to my horror, the fucking statue followed me, and the only way I can compare this is like the weeping angels from Doctor Who. Every so often, at random intervals, the animation would play of the statue appearing behind me. It was like the thing was chasing me, or I don't even want to fucking say it, haunting me. By this point, I was on the verge of hysterics. But not even once did the thought of turning off the console occur to me. I don't know why. I was so wrapped up in it. The terror felt all so real. I tried to shake the statue, but it would literally appear right behind me every single time. Link started to begin to make weird animations I had never even seen him do before. He would flail his arms around or spasm randomly, and the screen would cut to the happy mask salesman smiling again for a brief moment before I was face to face with that fucking statue again. I ended up running into the Swordmaster's dojo and ran to the back. I don't know why. But in my panic, I just wanted some kind of assurance that I'm not alone here. To my dismay, I found no one, but as I turned to leave, the statue cornered me in the cubby in the back. I tried attacking the statue with my sword, but to no avail. Confused and backed into a corner, I just stared at the statue, waiting for it to kill me. Suddenly, the screen flashed again to the happy mask salesman, and Link turned to face my screen, standing upright, mirroring the statue, looking at me along with his copy. Literally
Ben,
staring at
Ben's
me.
Coming.
Whatever was left of the fourth wall was completely shattered while I ran out of the dojo terrified. Suddenly, the game warped me to an underground tunnel and the reverse Song of Healing queued up again and I was given a brief moment of rest before the statue started appearing behind me again, this time aggressively. I could only take a few steps before it would summon behind me again. I hurriedly made my way out of the tunnel and appeared in the Southern Clock Town. As I ran aimlessly in sheer panic, suddenly a re-dead screamed and the screen faded to black as dawn of a new day and I appeared again. The screen faded in and I was standing on top of Clock Tower with Skull Kid hovering over me. Silent. I looked up and the moon was back, looming just meters above my head, but the Skull Kid just stared at me hauntingly with that fucking mask. A new song was playing. The Stone Tower Temple theme played in reverse. In some sort of desperate attempt, I equipped my bow and fired off a shot at the Skull Kid, and it actually hit him and he played an animation of him reeling back. I fired again, and on the third arrow, a text box appeared saying, "That won't do you any good, hee hee." And I was picked up off the ground, levitated upwards on my back, and then Link screamed as he burst into flames, instantly killing him. I jumped when this happened. I had never seen this move used by anyone in the game, and Skull Kid himself didn't have any moves. As the death screen played, my lifeless body still burning, the Skull Kid laughed and the screen faded to black, only to have me reappear in the same place. I decided to charge him, but the same thing happened. Link's body was lifted off the ground by some unknown force, and he immediately burst into flames again, killing him. This time, during the death screen, the faint sounds of the reverse song of healing could be heard. On my third and final try, I noted that there was no music playing this time, that all there was eerie silence. I remembered that in the original encounter with the Skull Kid, you were supposed to use the ocarina to either travel back in time or summon the giants. I attempted to play the Song of Time, but before I could hit the last note, Link's body once again horrifically exploded into flames, and he died. As the death screen neared its end, it began to chug, as if the cartridge was trying to process a lot of something. When the screen came to, it was the same scene as the first three times, except this time Link was lying on the ground dead in a position that I had never seen in the game before, his head tilted towards the camera with the Skull Kid floating above him. I couldn't move, I couldn't press any buttons, all I could do is just stare at Link's dead body. After around 30 seconds of this, the game simply fades out with the message, "You've met with a terrible fate, haven't you?" before kicking you out to the title screen. Upon getting back to the title screen and starting again, I noticed my save file was no longer there. Instead of Link, it was replaced with "Your Turn." Your Turn had 3 hearts, 0 masks, and no items. I selected Your Turn, and immediately when I did, I was returned to the Clock Tower rooftop scene and my Link dead and the Skull Kid hovering over, with the Skull Kid's laugh looping again and again. I quickly hit the reset button, and when the game booted up again, there was one more save file added below Your Turn, entitled Ben. Ben's save file is right back where it was before I deleted it, at the Stone Tower Temple with the moon almost crashing. I turned the game off at that point. I'm not superstitious, but this is way too fucked up even for me. I haven't played it at all today. Hell, I didn't even get any sleep last night. I kept hearing the reverse song of healing music in my head and just remembering the sense of dread I felt exploring Clocktown. I drove back to the old man's house today to ask him some questions with a buddy of mine. No way I was going there alone. Only to find that there's a for sale sign in the front yard, and when I rang the door, no one was home. So now I'm back here, writing down the rest of my thoughts and recording what happened. Sorry if some of this has grammatical errors and whatnot, I'm running on no sleep here. I'm terrified of this game, even more so now that I relived it a second time writing all this down, but I feel like there's still more to it than meets the eye, and that there's something calling to me to investigate this further. I think Ben is something in this equation, but I don't know what, and if I could get a hold of the old man, then I would be able to find some answers. I need another day or so to recuperate before tackling this game again. It's already taken a toll on my sanity, I feel like, but next time I do this, I'm going to be recording my footage all the way through. The idea to record only came to me towards the end, so you see the last few minutes of what I saw, including Skull Kid and the elegy statue, but it's on YouTube here. I'm going to stay in this thread for a little while longer before I fall asleep to answer any questions you guys might have, or hopefully listen to your ideas or theories to help me shed some light into this, or maybe things I should try to do. I think I'm going to play Ben's file tomorrow to see what happens. Maybe I was supposed to do that all along. I don't believe in paranormal shit, but this is a little fucked up. But maybe this Ben guy is just a really good hacker programmer. I don't want to think about the alternatives if he isn't. That's the end of the copy-paste. I'm hoping that maybe this is some kind of running gag the developers had and that other people have gotten gag or hacked copies of the game like this. This really just scares me. And then, of course, the famous Jeducible YouTube channel has day4.wmv, which you can watch on YouTube if you are very interested in this. I really invite you to do so because the fact that it has a video to it is everything to this urban legend.
The thing is genius from very beginning to very end. The video, bits of information, he keeps the claims well within the restrictions of what the technology could do at the time.
Yes.
Like there's no weird additions of like things that just don't make sense. He even adds the whole like, you know, it was running slow because it seemed like it was trying to load a lot of something. Like, he keeps it realistic, and then you give a snapshot of a modded whatever, and that, man, it's just
clearly
perfect.
He's clearly familiar with this game. And when you see the LG,
there's no
of
point
emptiness,
where you're like, he leaves it and then like doesn't. He's like, maybe I'll engage with it tomorrow. No, he gives you everything he had.
But like,
great.
What's brilliant about it is there's multiple posts, and like they start having videos. Like, you can look up, I think it's ben.wmv on YouTube.
Yeah, that's the that's the second like really big video.
And it
yeah.
literally is, you can like everything in claim one, in post one, you can view in that video. Everything from the statue to weird stuff happening to Link to like crazy letters on screen. Very well done as like an internet mystery kind of thing. Very neat.
Yeah. And remember how I was talking about the statue having like the liminal space, like the liminal energy that we're talking about of like being afraid of something when you were a kid. I was like, I don't know, 13 or 14 when Majora's Mask came out. I'm not exactly sure. Still pretty young. That statue, I could imagine if you're like 8 or 6 or 7, somewhere in there, that Elegy of Emptiness statue alone, I don't even think of Zelda when I see it. I think of Ben Drowned because of how successfully they identified this thing. When we show it to people, is going to creep the shit out of people. And I don't need to hack a model into the game to make it. It's just like this creepy thing. And when you play the real game, the fact that it's there just somehow legitimizes the mystery. So there you go. Story time over. Ben Drowned.
Fantastic.
Check it out.
It's a classic. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for joining us on this second main episode, everybody. We appreciate it. Yeah, nice big one for you.
Don't forget to read my cheeseburger episode, my cheeseburger article.
And go catch up on the UFO stuff or the incursions, the drone incursions and stuff. Just fucking fascinating. We'll be back next week with a regular episode and another minisode. We appreciate you. We love you. Goodbye.
Bye.